There are these passages in the new book, Three Mothers, that reframe historical moments about some of the most iconic civil rights leaders. For instance, we learn the details of an excited Alberta king traveling to Norway to see her son, Martin Luther, accept the Nobel Peace Prize. Or that time James Baldwin's mother, Burtis, helped him work through one of the characters of his now very well-known play, Blues for Mr. Charlie. Author Anna Malaika Tubbs makes the case in her new book that knowing these stories helps us better understand America. She joined us on Skype to talk more about the three mothers, how the mothers of Martin Luther King Jr., Malcolm X, and James Baldwin shaped a nation. And we started off our conversation talking about the context in which these women lived.
When I started the research, I first went to the books that were about the men. That was kind of my starting point. And I quickly realized that the parts of their life that were the least documented were before they met their husbands and before they had their sons. So before in history, where this man makes them important. And so I spent really a lot of time finding this historic context, really weaving together the details of all the different places where they came from and the places that they lived and what they cared about. Each of these moments would influence them differently based off of their own access to resources, their own education levels, Jim Crow laws, two world wars, the Cold War. I wanted us to explore Black history and American history through the eyes of Black women, Black girls, Black mothers.
Well, let's talk about these mothers individually. Let's start with Louise Little, Malcolm X's mother. She was born in Grenada, met Malcolm's father in Canada. They traveled the country teaching the Marcus Garvey Doctrine of Black Independence. But yes, after Malcolm's father was killed, Louise was deemed unfit to care for her children, and she was sent to a mental institution for 25 years of her life.
She is constantly the victim of these racist attacks, and it's not by coincidence. A big part of it is that she's very outspoken. She is this radical activist even before she meets her husband. And even after her husband passes, she wants to stay involved. She wants to provide for her children on her own, but she's not given the life insurance money that she deserves. She also then faces what many women of color over the years have spoken about, which is the invasive nature of welfare workers and this feeling that you're being judged when you're receiving the aid and the care that you're supposed to have available to you. And so there's a white male doctor who is instrumental in sending her to the institution, and I include the letter verbatim in the book where he says she's maladjusted, she's had a change in personality. He judges her for having her eighth child, and he ends by saying, quote unquote, that she's imagining being discriminated against. The craziness of saying about a Black woman from a white man that she's imagining being discriminated against. But this is enough to put her away for 25 years of her life because her family members were all her children. So they were too young to be able to advocate for her. Therefore, again, she's put away against her will.
I want to talk with you about Burtis Baldwin, the mother of James Baldwin. And we learned that these two were extremely close in your book. One educator at James's school when he was a child actually commented that Burtis's beautiful use of language, they all understood that James Baldwin got that from his mother. Your
yes.
telling of Burtis's story, in a way, gives us a fuller picture of the world that James Baldwin shared with us through his writing. I mean, it actually helps complete the picture.
Yes, and that's what I want to accomplish with the book. I have a lot of goals for the book. That's definitely one of them, is that we have a fuller appreciation of these men. It's not to say that we need to erase the men, but when we do erase the mothers and we leave them out of the story, we don't fully understand how these men came to be who they were and how they changed our world for the better. And each of these sons credited their moms. There's letters and quotes from them where they say, "It's because of my mom that I was able to do this." And I would say the clearest example of that comes with James Baldwin. Even when he passes away, his kind of dying wish is that he has a grave next to him. It's a double plot where his mother will join him when she passes. She has eight other children. But when he dies, he knows that people are going to want to come and see his grave, and they're going to know that his mother is interconnected with him, that they are inextricable from each other's lives. He was well aware of it, and it's just time that the rest of the world is too.
Anna, we also get glimpses of Malcolm and James and Martin through a mother's eyes. One story that tickled me was of a little Martin begging his mother to allow him to go to school when he wasn't even old enough yet.
I love that story as well. I think it's so cute, and how she, you know, actually agrees that she'll do this for him. And it takes a teacher noticing that he's too young and sending him home, but how he carries forward this feeling that my mom believed in me and that's all he really needed. With Malcolm X, one of my favorite stories is how much he loved growing peas. A big part of being this Marcus Garvey follower is that you believe in self-sufficiency. And so Louise and Earl taught their children how to hunt and plant their own food. And Malcolm speaks to growing his peas and then laying on the ground next to them and dreaming of his future, just staring at the sky. And I just find that to be so beautiful. And then with James Baldwin, I just picture him with each of his siblings, you know, he's helping to take care of them, and he sees himself as his mother's right-hand man because he really has this deep resentment of his stepfather, who is abusive towards him, abusive towards his mother, and he decides that in order to help her through that, he's just going to be by her side. And you just see with these three boys, their love for their moms, their dependence on their moms, as well as their mom's ability to be honest and vulnerable with their sons as well.
Mm-hmm. Okay, let's talk about Alberta King, MLK's mother. She was raised in Atlanta. Her father was a preacher. Before marriage, we learned that she wanted to become a teacher, but laws prevented married women from teaching.
Yeah, terrible.
Yeah, I mean, that is what I mean by the context that you give in this book. We learn about the time that they were living in. Here's a clip from radio reporter Eleanor Fisher's 1961 interview with MLK, where he's talking about the role of the Black mother in America, including his own. Let's listen.
It seems to me that the only thing that the mother can do, the Negro mother, is try from the beginning to instill in the child a sense of somebodiness. This was what my mother tried to do. She made it very clear that in spite of these conditions, you are as good as anybody else, and you must not feel that you are not.
I mean, Anna, it's almost like that's the full-time job of a Black mother. But we learned from your book that throughout his life, Martin consulted with his mother on just about everything. And one of the most horrific parts of her story is that she was deeply afraid her son would be killed. And Martin really didn't try to protect her from that possibility. Can you read the excerpt of when King went to his mother to have this conversation about death?
Okay. After dinner at the King household one night, as they sat on their patio and watched the sunset, Martin turned toward Alberta and said, "Mother, there are some things I want you to know." He continued, "There's a chance, Mother, that someone is going to try to kill me, and it could happen without any warning at all. But I don't want you to worry over any of this." He came closer to her side. "I have to go on with my work, no matter what happens now, because my involvement is too complete to stop."
Anna, it's a sobering fact that all three of these mothers outlived their sons.
Yes, and it's the tragedy that we know and start the book with, and then you see their lives develop. And it's all a part of painting their humanity so that we feel it, so that we cry in ways that we might not have in just hearing of the history.
Was that the case for you? I know that you're a new mother.
Personally, that chapter, obviously, where I talk about the sons all passing away, I had to distance myself from it. As much as I felt connected to their three stories, I also felt inspired by their ability to not give up, to know that in this country, their children were going to be viewed differently. And I'm well aware of that for my own child. But they were also so clear that they were going to be part of that change and that their children were going to help transform systems around them. I see it as something that we need to stop looking at as some kind of inevitable lot for Black women to carry, as if we're supernatural and can stand more pain than other people. I want this book to be about changing that circumstance. What are the policies that we can put in place to make sure that we're on a different trajectory and we can reduce the loss in our Black communities?
Anna, recently we re-aired a conversation my colleague Michelle Martin had with the late Cicely Tyson. And Tyson told her a story about her role in the movie Sounder. It was a story about a Black family and their love for each other. And Tyson says during a press junket, she heard that a lot of white people didn't know Black children called their parents mommy and daddy. Do you think at the root this kind of mythology is why it's only now that we're examining the lives of women like this.
We have to reckon with the fact over and over again that this country was built by slaves, and it was built by saying that we Black people were not people. We were property. You know, Black mothers in America are the only ones who have legally been deemed the givers of property. When we can confront that dehumanizing treatment, when we can confront how that is playing a role in mass incarceration, in the Black maternal health crisis, and so much more, that's when we're able to move forward and say, what can we put in place to recognize humanity? That's where it all comes back to. I do hope my book contributes to that. It's about more people recognizing who we are as human beings.
Anna Malaika Tubbs, her new book is The Three Mothers, How the Mothers of Martin Luther King Jr., Malcolm X, and James Baldwin Shaped a Nation. Anna, thank you so much for your work.
Thank you so much for having me on the show. I really appreciate the support.